Welcome to the Women and Money Cafe. I'm your host, Julie Flynn, independent financial advisor and financial coach. And this is the weekly money podcast for women by women, exploring the practical and emotional side of money. Welcome back to the Women and Money Cafe. Now, today, I've got the usual suspects on the sofa with me. I've got Sarah.
Hello.
I've got Michelle.
Hi, Julie.
And I've got a very bouncy and energised Emily.
Hello.
All right. So, as we're recording this, I get that we're in the middle of January now. But as we're recording this, this is actually our first episode of the year, so we're a little bit rusty, folks, so forgive us. But we've come up with a cracking idea for an episode for you. Okay, so you know how we've got lots of knowledge, lots of collective knowledge. We thought, how do we share this with you? So for today, what we're going to do with you is we're going to share with you the best money move that we ever made. So bear in mind, we've got probably over 100 years worth of experience sitting on the sofa. What we thought is let's plough our collective memories to think about a thing that we did with money that when we look back, we think, oh, that was a cracking idea. I'm so pleased I did that. So prepare to have four amazing money ideas shared with you today. So let's say we were kind of chatting amongst ourselves, weren't we? Looking for inspiration for an episode. We came up with this one. What were your thoughts, Michelle, when we touted this idea?
I think for me, it's trying to think back to all the things that you've done throughout your life that have made the biggest impact with money. And for me, I've mentioned it many times on here before, and I will still stick by it because it's my little holy grail in that I have lots of different pots of money, which I put money into weekly, monthly, which then allows me to dip into them when I need to for those things. So I feel a bit more organized, I think. And yeah, I just feel a bit more in control of my money. Before, when it was all in one big pot and I had stuff coming out all through the month, I didn't have a clue where I was or what was left. And that can leave you with less than nothing left at the end of the month. And I don't want to ever go back to that position. Does that make sense?
It does. So given that, yeah, you have shared this with us before, but given that the episode is about our best money moves ever, I feel that's kind of given me permission to get really nosy about what's going on with your pots of money. So tell us, what do you have pots of money for? Tell us the different things you use.
So I have a pot of money for each daughter. So when they need things, I've got something I can go to, and I add to that regularly. They don't know that, by the way. That bit's a bit of a secret unless they listen to this. But I also have one for my tax, because that's the really boring one, but necessary to have. Holiday, Christmas. I have extras account, which I just decide that I might want something.
Well, this is the Michelle pot of money.
Yeah, I can't call it Michelle because then that makes it easier to spend. So if I just call it extras, it's there just in case I need it. And then sort of various savings accounts for different things. So sort of I'm saving for a house. So I'm hoping to buy a house in the next 12 months. So I've got a house deposit fund. So I've got loads of little pots, but it works really well for me psychologically.
All right. So is it all right if I ask you a few more questions about this?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've told us some of the things that you have pots of money for. And what I'm wondering is then, do you do sort of budgeting pots of money for like monthly stuff? So like a pot of money for groceries?
No.
No.
So I have one pot of money, which is what can be spent throughout the month, which can be, so not necessarily bills, but things like food and everyday stuff if we go out. So I have one pot of money for that, really. And that's obviously the chunkier one at the beginning of the month and usually the one with nothing left at the end of the month, because I've then dispersed it all out everywhere else. So that's sort of my control account. So if I know there's nothing left in that, then I've got a bit of an issue if I'm not at the end of the month.
Okay, so we want that one to be running reasonably healthy until we get round about the 30th.
Yes.
So how long have you been operating like this then?
So I've been doing this really, well, since I got divorced, actually. Right. Since I separated from my first husband. I have only had two, by the way, but since I separated from the first husband. And I suddenly had to budget the money that I had. And at the time, it wasn't a lot. And I had to make sure that I could meet everything throughout the month because I knew there was definitely nothing else coming at that point. So I started it probably on a slightly smaller scale. And it's just sort of grown. And as more things get added to my life, like becoming self-employed, or we go on different holidays to what we did back then, obviously the amounts just become different and bigger in some cases. But it started then, and it was the first time I think I ever felt in control of my money. Because during my marriage, I didn't.
Right, because that's interesting, because that's one of the questions I was going to ask you then as a follow-up is, how do you feel it's changed your life being able to manage your money like this? So you mentioned control. What else?
Well-being, really. I feel like I have money. I don't ever want to be in a position where I don't have money. And even though there's some of those pots might be quite small. So we're in January. So the Christmas one's rather sad. But it's about being able to look at it all as a whole. And I might look at those accounts separately and think, well, there's a little bit in there, there's a little bit in there. But if I was to put it all together, it actually looks quite nice. And I think actually I'm okay. But what eventualities may come, I'm okay. Right. And I could find money if I need to.
Right. And do you do this all with who you bank with?
So I bank with Lloyds and Starling.
Right.
Now, my main accounts are with Lloyds, and that's because I've been there for years, so I've just naturally kept them. And that's where my daughter's savings accounts are that I have for them, and I can see them regularly. All the other spots, sort of Christmas, holidays, tax, are all with Starling because I can't see them every day then. Because if I go into Lloyds to check my other one, I don't need to see them. It does come up on my Lloyds because you've got open banking where it can come up as a grand total at the bottom, but I don't see them all the time. So it's not something where I think, oh, I could dip into there, because it's not straight away in my head.
Right, I told you I was going to be super nosy about it, didn't I?
That's fine.
And I guess the other thing that I'm wondering is, obviously, apart from like the tax pot of money and the house deposit pot of money, have your pots of money changed much over the years, like from when you first started doing this after your divorce to how you do it now?
Yeah, they were probably more necessity pots prior to, or just after, you know, getting divorced and being separated. Now, I guess it's more what I would like. It allows me to plan. So I will sit down in the first week of January and decide how much is going into those pots each week or each month for that year. And I set up the standing orders, and that's done automatically then. So I know that money's gone, whether I like it or not.
All right. I'm full of questions, right? I've got more questions. So you mentioned the monthly or weekly standing orders, and I know from previous conversations that you don't like all your savings going out right at the start of the month.
No.
All right. So are some of them done on a weekly basis and some done on a monthly basis? And if so, why?
I think for me, weekly means it's the same as popping to Tesco's and buying a few bits, right, and it's just gone. I don't notice it being gone, if I'm honest with you. And the larger ones are the things that I know I really do need to save for. So that sort of money towards the house deposit or tax, they go as lump sums at the beginning because it's important that they're aside. And Christmas is weekly because some weeks I might actually add some more to it. But again, I don't notice that being gone. But the tax and the more essential things do go in one at the beginning, because then I know that I won't spend that.
All right. And the reason I asked that is because I think the psychology of it affects how successful we are, doesn't it?
Yeah. I was going to say, because if I nip to Tesco's, and we're probably all the same, you go in to buy one thing and you come out and you've spent £30, £35, and you think, well, those bin bags cost me an awful lot of money because I've just come out with a lot of stuff. But to me, so if I put £30 a week into a pot, it doesn't make any difference because I've quite easily gone and done that in Tesco's buying my bin bags.
Right. All right. No, that makes sense. Sarah, you look like you've got a wry smile on your face there as you're listening to Michelle. Is there anything you want to grill Michelle about on her spending habits or any reflections you have for us?
No, I don't think you need to be grilled any further. But that bin bags, yeah, you run out of one thing, don't you? I think everybody does that. Or like going shopping when you're hungry. when I did the whole money pot thing really late, And I still don't break it down as small as probably I should. But I like the main things. I just have the main things. And since we've decided we don't need to pay for our kids to go on holiday anymore, I definitely have a holiday pot. And I have a kitchen pot because my kitchen really needs to be redone. And it needs some structural work. So I have a kitchen pot. But I just think it just makes sense when it's just how it makes you feel, isn't it? It's that whole, you know, feeling in control and I'm in control of this money, not money's in control of me. I think it's in. And interestingly, again, it's going to be slightly different for everybody because I think we all do it a bit different, don't we? It's the same kind of thing, but we all have a slightly different approach to it.
Emily's just wondering if you had any reflections or questions for Michelle's money management system.
Which is the one pot that you resent putting the money into, or are you all happy about each one?
No, I'd probably say the tax one, if I'm honest with you. It's one of those things that when you're self-employed, you have to put your money aside for tax, and that's great. And you're actually really thankful that it's there when, end of January comes. However, throughout the year, you do get a bit sort of, that's a lot of money that's sort of going over. But it is worth it in the end. But that is the one that you do sort of get a bit, you know, reticent about and think, oh, I could do so much more with that.
And which is the one that you're very happy to put money into? So, for example, if you got a bit of a windfall, which one would you be cloying to put that extra bit of money into?
That would probably be holiday or Christmas. Holiday, because I love holidays. I love being somewhere hot and sunny. And Christmas, it's about me being able to spoil my family and do the things I want to do for them. It's not about what I spend on me for that. That's what I can then give to everybody else. And the experience of Christmas, what can we do together? You know, go away to London for a weekend or go and do things. For me, that's really important and that's really special. So they would be the two pots it would go to. Because the house deposit fund is just, will build on its own as I add savings. But they're my two sort of special ones, really.
All right, Michelle, thank you very much for submitting yourself to the grilling. I didn't think it was a grilling. It was like a thorough questioning. It was all in the name of research for the listeners. It's not me just being nosy. Okay, so that is a cracking, absolutely cracking money move that you've made, because it's left you feeling like you're mastering money now and money's not mastering you. So then as I move along the sofa, Sarah, What's the money move that you've made that you sit there and you think, I am so nailing it when I decided to do that?
Well, this is going back quite a long time now, but it was the one that made the biggest difference out of everything that I've ever done. And that was with my current husband. We'd come together separately, running independent, separate homes. All our money was completely separate. And being a very independent young lady, shall we say, I had no desire to share any financials of any sort. And we were quite a way into the relationship. We'd got children. We were married and we still had completely separate money. But what that led to is when we were juggling young children, and quite frankly, life was quite hard. You know, there wasn't a lot to go around by the time you're both trying to juggle work and three young kids. It became that there was no sort of communication. So although there was like a joint account for the household bills, there was nobody really knew where all the money was going, how much was coming in. And it was ridiculous, to be honest. You look back now and think, what on earth? But we just didn't. And then one day we just sat down and went, this is a bit silly. And there was a catalyst of a quite significant event that led us to totally changing how we do it. And then literally, I don't suppose I even realised at the time that I was probably sitting down doing a full financial plan, but we literally now have lots of conversations. We share everything. And we went initially to the other extreme. We got rid of all the separate accounts and just had joint. And then we realised that that was a bit crazy as well. It worked for a bit when they were really young and there was just all the money came in, and then we could know we've got money for childcare, money for this, money for that, as like Michelle was saying. But then it was like, well, you know, when you start to earn a bit more money, and it was like, well, actually, now we can afford to save for things, or I want a bit of my money, or, you know, we knew if we bought each other a present because it all came out of the same account. So then it just gradually evolved. And by the time I got into more serious financial planning from a professional point of view, I could then look back on that journey and think, well, I went a long way around that, didn't I? But we worked it out in the end. And I think the biggest thing was just sitting down and us going, why on earth are we not talking about this? Because we're making it so hard for each other. So actually, it's less about the accounts, joint, single, whatever. It's more about the fact that we actually talked. We actually sat had a conversation, and we still do that. And one thing that we still do between Christmas and New Year, when you get that nice little lull time when you're in, you know, mode, is we just have that nice little reflection on the last year, the good stuff, the stuff we're grateful for, what we're worried about, what about next year? We talk about the kids and all those things. And in all of that is the money, the practical stuff. So we had certain policies that finished this year, for instance, because the kids got to a certain age, you know, protection policies and all that sort of thing. So again, it's just keeping that communication going. And I think that's been the biggest thing. Doesn't matter how it's evolved or what else has happened along the way, but the fact that we're able to have that conversation and go, oh, I'm a bit worried about this. I've been a bit silly with this. What do we think about this? Is just the biggest thing, especially when you're in a relationship.
Okay, so here come my questions. Are you ready?
No!
Yes, you are. You know what I'm like. So I guess as I'm listening to you talk there, and I can see how it's such a simple thing, but really, really powerful. But simple is not always easy. And so what I'm curious about is, have there been any challenges you and your husband have experienced along the way as you started, maybe probably more likely at the start of this, trying to communicate money journey?
Well, as I said, there was a catalyst of an event that was fairly catastrophe. And so it was it started from a very intense emotional journey of fear. We were going through a very, very tough time, not between us, but what was happening to us. So that was kind of what led to a series of events of things happening. And then us have, you know, and it almost happened naturally. But now sometimes I might feel a bit of build up of resentment because I'm still the one who generally will manage, like Michelle, manage pots of money, do things like that. But then, you know, you have to say, oh, no, actually, why am I getting resentful? Does he actually know? Have we talked about it? So, but no, fortunately, my husband is very laid back about these things. If he wants to do something, he will say, thinking of doing this or doing this for one of the kids or something, is that okay? Can we do that? Can that come out of X, Y, and Z? And we just have a look and we talk about it. But challenges between us talking about it are not usually the issue nowadays. It's usually the outside things that happen that put us into the point where we go, one of us or both of us might go, might lead to a conversation that might start initially a bit up here, but then you gradually come back down to, you know. So it's, no, I know, yeah, we've had a lot of challenges a good few years ago now, but thankfully, she says, touching wood, life's calmed down a bit.
Right, so like you said, I think it's perfectly understandable and natural that sometimes when we start conversations about money, it can occur when we're in a slightly heightened emotional state. Mm-hmm. So that you've been talking about money with your partner now for a long period of time. So have you got any top tips on how to, if the conversation started and one of you, or God forbid, both of you are in a heightened emotional state, any tips on how to sort of just decompress that a little bit?
Well, and certainly in my experience, unless it's something that you absolutely have to have a decision on in that next few minutes, is just try and say, we're not helping each other here, are we? Let's just walk away and calm down. Because you have to come at it, and it's not easy when you're in a difficult situation, but you have to try and come at it when you're both feeling vaguely calm. And dare I say, you go off and remember why you're with this person and you do actually love them, even though this is all a bit shit at the moment. But you kind of need to come to a calm space and hopefully where you're not distracted and there's an environment when you can be quite relaxed and say, okay, we know this is a bit shit. what can we do? Well, how can we get around this? How can we talk about it? And it's not easy, because when you're in those situations, it just happens, doesn't it? But being able to do that is, in my experience, the best thing. And that might mean sometimes that one of you has to walk away and leave the room. No. Depending on your relationship. I mean, you know, quite lucky with mine. But yeah, it's making sure you've got an environment where you can at least try and have a calm conversation.
All right. So, Michelle, as you're listening to Sarah talk there then about how her and Mr. Walker chat about money, any reflections or questions for Sarah?
I think for me, listening, it's one of those things that actually that's a position I would quite like to have alongside what I do. But because myself and my husband both come from previous relationships and we've both got children from previous relationships, actually mixing the finances becomes far more complicated, because I might want to do something for my children and he might want to do something for his children. And then you become, well, that's my money, that's your money. How much have you spent? How much have I spent? And I think I've often thought about, could we do that? And that's always the thing that comes into my head, because we do actually have two sort of separate lives aside from our marriage together. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, if I could find a way of having that, what you have, you know, Sarah, with my husband, that would be great, because I could have my pots and have that. But for me, and maybe for other people in my sort of, you know, situation, that might seem a little out of reach. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Unless, I mean, would you be able to have something where you still manage things separately, but there's a little small part that you both contribute that is your joint, for your joint.
Which is what we're moving towards, that. So
it does take time, doesn't it? With blended families, it is always a challenge, I think.
But ultimately, that is something I would love. You know, for me, that would be, you know, so I think that's great, Sarah. I think it's a lovely way to be. And that's how I think it, if I could have it that way, and if I could get my head around it that way, that would be amazing. So I'm going to work towards that.
Well, we have a lot of fun running the cafe. The reason we do it is to reach as many women as possible to empower them around money. So if you know a woman who would benefit from feeling financially empowered, you can help them and us by sharing this episode with them. Emily, what are your thoughts on this?
Thoughts? Well, I was feeling incredibly energetic and bouncy when I came into this conversation, and it's all got very serious. But anyway, meeting you on your level in your sensible state. No, I think it's really interesting that obviously Sarah and Michelle have both talked about the way that they do things, obviously different situations. I mean, similarly to Sarah, so my current husband, I like the way you use that word, Sarah, current husband, my current husband and I have two children who are 12 and 13. They are still very much, you know, needy. We just keep saying that we can't wait until they are able to have their own jobs, so at least they've got a little bit of their own money coming in. But they're so incredibly financially dependent at this stage, obviously. And more than that, we made a commitment to them to send them to a private school, which is why we have to work very, very hard to do that. And I feel that we're hugely stretched in terms of making, you know, having made these commitments, it's like we've got three mortgages. And we manage our finances on a separate basis. And given that we have so much joint expense, I do find that that is a bit bizarre. So it's not necessarily my choice that we manage it on this sort of quite separate basis. We have a joint account that's for the bills, including mortgage, school fees, all of that. But yeah, I think that it's crazy when you can't see the big picture. It's, you know, because he doesn't understand what my picture looks like, and I don't really understand what his picture looks like. And all that does is cause a little bit of disharmony at crunch points, when we start talking about, oh, where are we going on holiday? And I say, oh, let's go to Brazil. And he's like, yeah, but you, how much are you putting towards the holiday? I said, well, I don't pay for the holidays. You pay for the holidays. I pay for X, Y, Z. No, well, we can't afford Brazil. Well, you know, well, what can we afford? Because, you know, is these conversations all of the time, is that we need to know how it looks on a joint basis. You absolutely need to know. And how are you going to know that unless you're completely open, have access to each other's accounts, or you're communicating about it? And yeah, I think we have extremely busy lives. The money comes in, the money goes out, and there's not enough communication. So I love the way that you're doing it. And yeah, I think that is the perfect way of doing it.
Well, I'd love to say that, you know, I'd sat down and worked it all out, but it just kind of happened. And it's only when you look back that you think, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have used examples like that with clients, because if you're doing financial planning with a client, you're always looking at the bigger picture, the whole picture. If they can't each see the whole picture, that's quite, yeah.
You can't ever answer. So I had a lady in this morning to say, oh, I'm getting a settlement from work. I want you to tell me how much to put into my pension. On the face of it, sounds like such a simple question. You can't even begin to answer that until you know the whole picture.
So, Emily, having listened to Sarah Living in Nirvana, the Promised Land of Joint Finances, do you feel inspired to go and have a chat with Mr. Poole and say, you know what, I think we could be talking about money a little bit better, and I think it's going to make both of us feel a bit more secure and a bit happier?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I run the spreadsheet that says what our joint expenses are, so I'm aware of it. But frankly, that's not fair, because I'm dealing with the stress sometimes of having to make it all work without him, and he's oblivious. So every now and then I'll just have a bit of a meltdown and say, oh, well, you know, there's been, you know, we've had to buy new sports equipment or trainers for everyone, and, you know, we're a bit short this month and you need to put money in the joint account. And when he's like, well, what do you mean I need to put money in the joint account? You've been overspending. No, I haven't. It's called life, and this is what children cost. And this is my biggest gripe, is that our largest joint expense, love them, are our children. And children are expensive.
Yes, they are.
Newsflash.
They're so expensive when they grow up too. Yes.
Children are expensive. And so I think I would be very interested to know the number of, I'm going to be probably sexist here, but it is the Women and Money Cafe, so I think most of our listeners are women.
Apologies to any men for whatever Emily's about to say next.
No, but basically the person running the day-to-day expenses is the one that is going to be aware of how much things cost, and therefore they, people like myself, are not surprised by the fact that children cost money. My husband, I think, is sometimes a little bit surprised just how much money children cost, and I think there's probably a lot of families in this country where 50% of the relationship is not really particularly clear on how much children cost. So yeah, having that ongoing conversation is important. Yeah,
I think in any relationship you get distribution of tasks, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think listening to you, Sarah, what's really clear is that both of you come to the conversation of, generally, I'm going to assume, but there's no blame and there's no judgment. If you're starting to feel yourself a bit irked, you're like, okay, I've possibly not communicated this to him. Yeah. So I don't know if Emily is finding a way to communicate to Mr. Yeah. P in a way that he's going to be receptive to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that latter comment is the one that's important.
I'd probably not spring the Brazil idea on him last minute, but kind of plan.
I would be building up to the Brazil thing. I would leave brochures lying around the house.
And I'll take Michelle's tip and set up a little pot, Brazil.
All right. So that leads us on then, Emily, to what's the one thing that you have done with money that you're like, do you know what? That was a super smart move. Check me out.
I think it was probably a few years ago. I think it's probably during COVID times, actually, beginning of COVID. And I I think it was my grandfather's estate finally got sorted out, and I managed to get a small inheritance. It wasn't huge, but it was enough to have to think twice about, well, what do I do? I'm not just going to stick it in a current account. And obviously the options that you have available as to what to do with your money, of course, there's a lot of options. It's, you can go and blow it on a holiday to Brazil. you can stick it in a current account and get hardly any money on it, as it was then. You can put it in your pension, and you can stick it in ISA, invest it. So many options, and that's why often people use financial planners like ourselves, is because they get this amount of money and they don't know what to do with it. And I thought about it, and I did the usual, yeah, do I pay off the credit card? Do I spend it on, you know, all of these options. And
handbags were in there, Emily, weren't they? Handbags were an option.
Handbags. I'm not a massive handbag fan. I did buy one once, but I saved for that. I used the pot method. Thank you, Michelle, for that. I earned that one. So I'm so proud of that handbag, I'll let you know. So what I decided, though, was that I need to be sensible. It's a chunky enough amount of money not to just chuck it at one thing. And I thought of it in terms of how I speak to my clients about financial planning. And it's to make sure you're okay in the short term. There's something for the medium term. And then you've got something in the long term. So breaking that down into products, if you like, my short term was pay off the credit card, which wasn't massive, but it was, you know, enough to be an annoyance, or so get rid of that. A little bit into the current account. And then the medium term money being the ISA, because obviously ISA's a great place to park it and invest it, but I've still got access to it if I need it. And then the last section was into the pension, which, you know, I won't be able to touch until I'm 57. But it was important to do that, because if you worry too much about the here and the now, there isn't going to be anything left for your future self. And so obviously I'm always talking to clients about, you know, short, medium and long term money. And I have to therefore then apply that to this bit of money, and I basically split it about three different ways and did exactly that. And I think sometimes we can overthink these things. Oh, should we do this? Should we do this? How much? You know, well, actually, sometimes if it's causing you stress and you're deliberating too much, if it's a large amount of money, I'd definitely recommend seeing a financial planner. We'll talk it through with you and make sure that you put it in the right place. Or if it's just, you know, if it's not a massive amount, but it's something that you can sort out yourself, because you could do a lot worse than just saying, okay, let's just split it three ways and go short, medium, long. I think that was a fairly useful bit of advice to myself at that time.
All right. So thank you for sharing that. I think maybe I speak to a lot more financial advisors than your average financial advisor, for various reasons. And what strikes me about the story there, Emily, is you've done some classic financial planning and good financial advice there that we are all monumentally bad at doing for ourselves.
Yes.
Because I think I have been quite open before and confessed about I'm a little bit too medium long term and I don't give a toss about today. Julie still hasn't got enough on cash. She's still got it all invested, but I'm working on it. So I want to commend you on actually doing some good financial planning for yourself.
Thank you.
But I'm curious, like, having done that several years ago now, as you look back on it, is there anything in particular that you take away from having made that decision that helps you going forward?
Yeah, I think that I'm very much more engaged with my older self, my future self. And they do say that that is the biggest problem that most people have with saving for their long-term future, is that they can't even, you know, there's so many people living in the here and the now that they're not even considering the future. So previously to putting that chunk of money into my pension, I had not long left the corporate world and I have quite a large-ish final salary pension. And I think that when you're lucky enough to have a final salary pension, you tend to think, not really think about pensions. You think, oh yeah, I've got that. That'll be fine. That'll look after me. That and the state pension, that's all I need. And I think anyone who falls into that category is probably missing a bit of a trick, because they're not really thinking about their retirement. They're just parking it and going, let's look after myself now and in the medium term, and the final salary and state pension will take care of the longer term. And so, yeah, me deciding to put that money into my pension meant I reviewed my pension situation. I actually took out my ABCs from my final salary plan, which, you know, was a little ancillary put on the side, and added that to the amount of money that I was putting in the pension. I reviewed where I would put that pension. Obviously, you know that I'm into ethical and sustainable investing, and so I really looked around at which pension provider was going to suit me, and then which funds, so as not to be hypocritical and be invested in things I didn't feel right about. And yeah, I feel confident and happy that I've got that pot, and that's a pot that I've continued to use going forward, not resting on my laurels and saying, okay, it's fine, I've got the final salary, and now I've got the defined contribution, which is the best of both worlds.
All right, fantastic. I'd say that's quite an important lesson to have taken away from it. Michelle, any questions or any thoughts on what Emily did with her inheritance?
Only that really you've shared it between, as you say, today and the future. And I think that's something we all need to do, even with the short-term things in between. You know, if there are things that we want, so say saving for a house, it's a little bit further out. I've been doing that for sort of 4 or 5 years. So I think if we can always have a mind to what might come later, I mean, I do a lot of divorce work with people and they always think about today. Opposite to Julie, they think about today and not what's coming later. And it is quite hard to do, but it is really important. So no, I just think you've done a proper financial planning job on yourself, which is, as Julie says, something we don't often do to ourselves because we're all a bit naughty like that. A bit like your builder's house that's a complete wreck. You know, so yeah, no, I just think it's good. And if we can all have a little bit of short, medium and long term when we think about what we want, we can plan for that. And if we can plan in little chunks, that's better.
Mm. All right. Thank you, Sarah. Any thoughts or reflections or questions from yourself?
Well, I think we've pretty much covered it. But yes, good bit of self-financial planning there. It's funny, isn't it? As soon as you receive any sort of money like that, I find myself, because years ago I'd have been definitely, I'm out shopping or holiday booked or whatever. I was the world's worst live for today, spontaneous. And I find myself now having to putting like your professional hat on. Okay, so what are we going to do with this? Because otherwise it'll just be, you know, the inner self will come off and it'll be blown in about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind admitting I find that quite hard, because I always think, well, it's not money we've worked for. We've just been given it, you know, therefore it's, you know. So I love what you've done with that. And I have to not make myself. That's probably a bit silly, but I do sit down and, you know, do things like that very similarly. But I always take the view with that whole short-term thing, because I'm, again, the opposite of Julian. I think we've talked about this before. I love living for today. I wouldn't have any problem with not having anything long-term, especially in the past before I, you know, knew all my things that I do now. But obviously I do have long-term stuff. But I take the view that if I want to live for today for the rest of my life, then I have to do a bit of long-term planning to ensure I can always go, yes, today we're going to go and do this. So, yeah.
Mm. I've also applied this short, well, certainly, yeah, I guess I have applied the short, medium, long-term philosophy to my health. I think wealth and health should be sort of very much approached in the same way. And I know it's January and ask me in February and I'll probably not be dry and, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I'm really, this is, I think, one of the consequences of thinking about pensions and retirement is that I'm also now really thinking about, well, what kind of retirement am I going to have if I'm not healthy and I'm still young enough now to make decisions that hopefully will allow me to maintain my health. And sorry, I heard a statistic the other day that said women on average spend the last 19 years of their life in ill health, and men 14. Well, that's
brought the mood down, hasn't it?
Sorry, yeah. No, I'm just saying, also bring this long-term thinking to your health.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Yes, because trust me, by the time you're in on the wrong side of your 50s, it definitely is in your mind, you know.
Yeah, and there's no point having all of those pension pots if you can't go to Brazil.
Yeah, quite.
All right. Thank you for that, Emily. I think, listeners, what I'm taking away from that, and I don't know if you caught it there, it's like a brain hack that Emily's done on herself, because she wasn't that focused on future self. But the act of splitting that sum of money at that point in time into sort of now money and later money has kind of re-engaged her with being able to plan for a future self. So here's a little experiment for you. If you've got £100 or something spare, go and cut it into three. Just go and stick £33 in some cash instant account, put £33 somewhere that's medium money, and go and put £33 in the stock market. And just see if you can hack your own brain to engage with your future savings. Just a thought. Okay, now, nobody's going to be surprised, are they, that my thing is a long-term thing, are they?
No, definitely not.
So, obviously, I clearly need to work on my impulsivity and my live for today thing, but not right now. So there's loads of things that I've done with my money over the years. I look back and think that was a cracking idea. There's also plenty that I think were absolutely bloody stupid ideas, but that's a different episode. But the one that I'm going to share with you today is, and I think I might have touched upon this in previous podcast episodes, I never really paid that much attention to my pension until I was in my early 40s. Right, just wasn't paying attention. And I'll let you in a little secret. Why not? Because Emily kind of hinted at it. Right, you're not going to believe this, right? But I only joined financial services for the 6-week course. No, I did. And I think that was like 25 years ago. I was going to go and be a teacher. And I thought, well, they got final salary pensions. Boom, I'm sorted. I didn't actually intend on staying for this long. And then it dawned on me in my early 40s, like, oh, shit, that teacher thing isn't really working out. You better sort out a pension, love. So I started paying attention to my pension. So I went and rounded up all the little bits that I had from previous employers. I do have a small final salary one, but like the pot of money that isn't a final salary one, it wasn't very big, folks. I think it was about £30,000. I'm like, ooh. That's not going to get me very far, is it? And so I started putting £100 a month to start with. And then I invented the 10% rule. I have just invented this. It's not a real thing. Don't Google it. And so what I would do is I would just keep putting up the contribution whenever I could. And then every January, so round about now, I have to increase my pension contribution by 10%. And you could do 5%, you could do 3%, you could do whatever. And the act of making sure that I'm always increasing the contribution is what's totally turbocharged my pension. So I've gone from early 40s having a pension pot of about £30,000 to being well on track, to being able to retire when I want with the amount I want. So anybody that's listening that's in the 40s or even the 50s thinking, shit, I've left this too late. What's the point? I guarantee you, it is doable. And it was this 10% rule that has really got me from like this little tiny, tiny pension that someone in financial services should be ashamed to have, to being on track, to be able to retire when I want with what I want. Because I thought that was unachievable. So that's the thing I did that I'm really happy I did it.
I think that's amazing.
Done. Right, great. So no grilling, no questions, no reflections for Jules. We'll just go with that's brilliant. Perfect.
Okay, I've got a question. Why 10%? Because that's just a little bit normal. Why not 15%?
Was it easier on the maths?
By 10%. Because I can remember when I first started in financial services, you get pensions, you could have them escalating where they'd either go RPI, CPI, or 5%. That's just what you got back then. And I thought, and I looked at, if I put it up by, who wants to be messing about with CPI and RPI? Not me.
No.
Right? I want a number that's easy to work with. And I looked at what putting it up by 5% would do. And I thought, well, that's not really stretching me. I can afford a bit more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just stuck with 10%. It's a round number and it stretches me.
Just add a zero to the end.
Yeah. And it's just, it stretches me just that little bit, but not so much that I'm going to pause it, stop it, reduce it, because that's a whole motivation thing gone then.
But I love that idea when you think about, when we had the episode before about sort of the bills that went up with inflation, so your mobile and everything that were CPI plus the 3.9% that still really bothers me.
12 months on, listeners. We still don't have an answer.
No, we don't. But it's one of those things, actually, we all had to do those with all those other bills. Mm. And we all, you know, we have to suck it up, we get on with it, and we did it, and we managed it, and it was fine, you know, on the whole. So actually, by doing the 10%, you're doing the same thing. It's enforcing it and making the change happen without giving yourself a choice, I guess. So I think, you know, the mindset behind that is brilliant, because it happens with everything else. So why shouldn't it happen with your pension contributions?
Yep, very true. I had a critical illness, I still have critical illness policy that I took out in my very, very late 20s. And I don't know, I think at the time I did it, I was single. I thought, I don't need life cover and all that kind of stuff. There was just me. But I knew that I didn't want to be stuck with a mortgage and everything else. So I took out this critical illness. It was a whole of life, which for those of you old enough to remember that you could do whole of life critical illness policy. And I did it on an escalating basis. So it did used to increase each year. And again, you'd get your annual letter and think, oh, it's going up. Never really took money, but you did. You're right, Michelle. You just go with it. And because it was the one thing I knew I should never let go of, it was really, really essential, I kept that going. And then I think it was when I turned 50, they suddenly go, ooh, you're dodgy now. We're going to charge you a lot more money. And I think the first big hike I stuck with, and then after that, they review it every so many years. And then it got to the point where I thought, well, now I know how much I need. So I was able to say, okay, I won't let the premiums increase anymore. But the amount of cover I started with to what I've ended up with, you know, and the benefit that would benefit me and my family, even now, you know, it's and I didn't really notice it all those years, all the other stuff that I probably would have stopped, but I kept it going. So it does work. It does work. There are just certain things you just don't stop unless you're really up against it. But yeah.
All right. So then as we draw to a close then, just a quick summary. So the four cracking things that we did with money that we're really pleased that we did. Michelle has got her pots of money, which is allowing her to feel like she is totally mastering money. And she's completely in control. Sarah is the queen of communication and has the most harmonious marriage, apparently, out of all of us, as they chit-chat about money. And then you've got Emily, who, for a financial advisor, has done the best financial advising job for herself with her short-term, medium-term and long-term money. And then you've got me with my magic 10% pension. So these are our four massive, massive money lessons that we did for ourselves. So if you've got another one that you think we need to know about, do drop us a message, because we love to hear this stuff. But it just remains for me to say thank you to my lovely, lovely co-hosts, Sarah, Michelle, Emily. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Always amazing.
Thank you for listening to us. And until next time, please do take care of yourselves. Thanks for listening to the Women in Money Cafe. If you've enjoyed it, please leave us a review. It really does help. And also please note the podcast is for education and information only and doesn't constitute personal financial advice. Please reach out to one of us or any of the other fantastic financial advisors in the UK for that kind of help.